All right, it's time for another Gold Nugget segment brought to you by GoldSeek.com. Today's special guest, head of Euro-Pacific Capital, Peter Schiff. Well, my featured guest today says that gold will be the trade of the year. Peter Schiff is president and chief global strategist of Euro-Pacific Capital. Welcome back, Peter Schiff.
Well, thanks for having me back.
Let's begin with the trade of the year, as you're calling it, and the Fed tapering story. You know, at the last FOMC meeting in December, officials lowered the monthly MBS purchases from $85 billion down to $75 billion. Do you expect the new Fed chairwoman to continue the trend this week?
If she continues it, she's not going to continue it for long. I do believe that the Fed is ultimately going to reverse course and increase the monthly quantitative easing. It's not just mortgage-backed securities, it's treasuries that they're buying. I believe that as long as the Fed stays on its tapering path, as long as the expectations are for a increase in the amount of taper and a gradual cessation of quantitative easing, right, as long as we're on that trajectory and the market is looking forward to the day where the Fed is no longer in the markets propping up the bond market and propping up the mortgage market, and even beyond that, to the point where the Fed tries to exit some of its positions by actually selling, not just buying fewer government bonds and mortgages, but starting to sell the bonds and mortgages that it already holds. Right? So as long as we're on that trajectory, I think the stock market is going to be under a lot of pressure. I think we've already seen the beginning of that thus far in 2014. You know, we came into the year with a lot of optimism. Everybody was, expecting more of the same that we had in 2013. And so far, the market's been heading down. And I think that's going to continue until the Fed cries uncle, until the Fed comes to the rescue of the market and the economy. Because remember, the whole basis for the tapering is the economic recovery that has resulted from the wealth effect of a rising stock market and a rising real estate market that provide the collateral that we can borrow against to continue to consume things that we really can't afford. And so as the bubble starts to come out of those markets based on the Fed's taper talk, now all of a sudden the phony recovery is in danger. And in fact, the economic data that we're getting shows the economy losing momentum. Wall Street wants to dismiss it. You know, we got the bad jobs number. We got today, we got a very weak durable goods number. But everybody is looking past the bad news, assuming that it's just a fluke, that it's just an aberration, because so many people have such a vested interest in believing this mythical recovery, that we're going to have this 3 to 4% economic growth, and that's not going to happen. And so eventually the Fed is going to acquiesce, and we're going to be talking about more, not less QE. And the market doesn't expect that at all. Certainly the gold market doesn't expect that.
Okay, well, that's a good segue into the trade of the year, as you're calling it. A lot of factors here converging on the precious metals sector. China, of course, officially surpassed India as the world's biggest gold purchaser as well as producer, and that's partly due to Indian, you know, import restrictions, as well as the growing affluence, though, of China's middle class. You know, since the government has not revealed an official import tally in years, do you suspect that China may be consuming more gold than presumed?
I mean, they're consuming a lot more gold. In fact, I think the Chinese officials are being dishonest with respect to their holdings. I don't think they want to tell the world exactly how much gold they own, because then they probably won't be able to buy much more of it, because nobody will want to sell it to them once they appreciate just how much they have and how much they want to buy. So I think they want to keep their appetite under wraps as they quietly accumulate as much gold as they can. In fact, I think in 2014, those import restrictions in India are going to be lifted. I mean, they are doing a lot of damage. It's not doing anything to reduce India's trade deficit, and they shouldn't even consider gold as part of the trade deficit because they're not consumer goods. The gold is being purchased as a store of wealth, and so the fact that they're importing gold is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. But right now you've got all this illegal activity that, you know, there's more gold being smuggled into India than, you know, narcotics, and Indians are having to pay a big premium.
Yeah, right now up to $160 over a London spot.
That's not helping the Indian economy. It's not helping India's people having to pay more than the world price. So I do believe that they're going to get rid of these restrictions. And that will bring down the price of gold in India, which, of course, will increase demand for gold in India. And, of course, there are a lot of people who don't want to buy things illegally. They will come back to the market once, you know, they can legally do so. And I think you're going to see a lot of demand coming out of India, a lot of demand coming out of China, and renewed demand all around the world, including the United States, and eventually maybe even the speculators who have sold all their gold. And I think the only selling now coming from speculators is short selling. I think the speculators, the hedge funds, the private equity guys who jumped on the gold bandwagon for the first time in 2011, 2012, they all sold their gold in 2013. So I don't think there's any real speculators that still are in this market. I think the selling today is coming from the short sellers. That's people who are selling gold that they don't even own, expecting the price to drop. Well, I think they're wrong on what they're expecting to happen. Eventually, they're going to be forced to come into the market and buy that gold in competition with everybody else who wants to buy gold to cover those losing short positions. And so that's why, if you want to call it maybe the trade of the year, or maybe even gold stocks, I think they're probably even a better trade than the bullion itself, because there you have an even worst-case scenario baked into the price. I mean, whatever collapse people think is coming for the price of gold, they think it's going to be even worse for the miners. And so there, I think you have some tremendous opportunity once the price of gold moves up, you know, $200 or $300 an ounce, and it becomes clear that we're not going to 800, that we might hold 1500, 1600, or go a lot higher. A lot of these gold stocks that are literally price for bankruptcy are going to come, you know, back.
We've certainly seen the GDX and the HUI indexes overshoot it on the downside, viewed it as a leveraged play on the precious metals. But folks, I think, forget, you know, that these companies have cash flows, added incentive to look for some of those diamonds in the rough. Also wanted to ask you about, you know, last week news of slower than anticipated growth in China obviously rattled the markets. I mean, it's clearly had a negative impact on silver due to its industrial applications. We watched gold leap off the launching pad last week, but silver, of course, just slumped. How significant is China's economic growth, do you think, to the precious metals story?
Well, I think what's more significant is the growth of money supply around the world. I mean, that's what's really going to be driving precious metals demand, is that all these economies, including China, are printing too much money. And a lot of them are doing it because they feel it's the only way to stimulate their economies, even though it's wrong. It doesn't really stimulate the economy. It certainly props up asset bubbles and economies that temporarily depend on asset bubbles, like the United States. And also, you have a lot of nations, not China, but you have a lot of nations, developed nations in the United States and Western Europe, with tremendous amounts of debt, you know, and Japan. And these governments cannot afford to pay a market rate of interest. They need artificially low interest rates. They need their central banks to buy up all this debt, and they have to print money to do it. And so you have a world that's awash in inflation, and so that's where the demand is going to come from for gold or silver, because people are going to need a store of value. You cannot store value in dollars. You can't even store it in euros or Japanese yen. The longer you hold those currencies, the less they are going to be worth. In the meantime, you can't collect any interest for holding them, so all you do is lose. And therefore, if you don't want to suffer that kind of loss, if you want to be able to store your purchasing power and use it in the future, how are you going to do that? I mean, you can gamble on the stock market. Maybe you can put some money into collectibles. You can buy rare paintings or other types of works of art. But there, you know, you have much less liquidity. You have much bigger spreads between the bid and the ask. It makes a lot more sense for people who want to keep their purchasing power safe for later use, whether to fund consumption or other investments, that gold is the most viable alternative to depreciating fiat currencies. And as more and more people around the world rediscover the monetary qualities of gold and appreciate the dangers of fiat currency, demand is going to explode and the price is going to go way up.
Speaking of liquidity, some folks turn to the exchange-traded funds. The gold ETFs experienced inflows for the first time in nearly 6 months. Now, that's registered about $33 million increase there. That's the best number in a year and a half. So far, the junior gold miners are up about 17%, and the gold bullion spider ETF is also registering a solid inflow for the first time in a while. From your perspective, what does this mean for the market?
Well, I think for the gold market, I think it's great. I mean, if you recall, I launched my gold mutual fund with Adrian Day late last year in the fourth quarter of 2013. That was the first time I've ever launched a mutual fund that was exclusively gold mining. And I now have 9 mutual funds in the family, but right now the gold fund is the top performing fund. In fact, gold funds as a sector are the number one performing funds in 2014. And in fact, if you go on Morningstar.com and you look at my gold fund, right, which is EPGFX, Euro Pacific Gold Fund, Morningstar ranks my fund the number one fund for 2014 of 73 gold funds that they track. In fact, I'm not only number one for 2014, it's the number one gold fund for the last 30 days, which would include, a little bit of December. But and the reason that, you know, our fund is doing so well is because we have a lot of exposure to some of these junior companies, some of the smaller companies. And I think we've done a good job. Adrian Day has done a good job of picking the best of the best when it comes to the gold stocks. And so I think it's still a great time. In fact, we launched the fund at about $10 a share, and it initially went up over 11, and then it sold off close to $8 in December, and now it's just back up, you know, close to 10 again. But I think we're still right near the bottom. We're just bouncing along the bottom when it comes to these gold stocks. And if I'm right about, you know, this being the bottom and we're going to have a breakout, I mean, I think the returns are going to be spectacular in these gold mining stocks. And again, that's why we have this fund, and that's why I picked Adrian Day to manage it for me, because he's been managing gold portfolios for 25, 30 years. I think he knows this business cold. I think he's a great stock picker. He did an excellent job with the private accounts that he managed before I brought him on board to manage my gold fund. But I think it's a great time. And if, you know, you're not in the market, you know, check out my fund, read a prospectus, you know, make sure that it fits your objectives, know the risks. But if you're going to get into the market, this is the best way, I think, to do it with that fund.
Well, analysts at Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, as well as RBC, certainly mirror your sentiments, gold positive. Looking for a short squeeze here, they're calling for a squeeze above the 1270 and 1275 level that could send the market another $150 higher. I'd like to know if you suspect this could occur and what might be the trigger.
There are a number of triggers that can send the market higher, so, you know, eventually something will. I mean, it might be either a very negative data point, maybe a really bad jobs number that comes out, or it could be an admission from the Fed, from Janet Yellen, that she's going to slow down the tapering or that she's going to reverse it or something like that. Something could happen that is going to cause gold to go up. It could even just be that the stock markets are going down. I mean, one of the reasons that so many people are bearish on gold is because they're bullish on stocks. They think, well, if the stock market's going up, well, then there's no reason to buy gold, which I think is false. I think gold and stocks can go up at the same time, especially if it's bad monetary policy that's driving it. I mean, inflation makes prices go up, but I think gold benefits more from inflation than just the major stock market averages. But weakness in the stock market could do it. Other problems maybe in some of the emerging markets. There could be some kind of a currency crisis somewhere. I think ultimately it's going to be the dollar that's going to be the currency in crisis. But there are a lot of things that can go wrong. Meanwhile, most people think nothing can go wrong. I mean, certainly we ended 2013 on such a high level of optimism where, you know, Morgan Stanley was just a week and a half ago, came out and revised downward their forecast for the price of gold in 2014 based on the fact that there was no reason to have anything safe, that there was no longer any risk, and that people would just want to buy the riskiest assets possible to take advantage of this great situation that we have in the world, and that there would be no need for any kind of insurance policy, any kind of safe haven. And so they saw nothing but downside for gold. You know, that was just a week before all this turmoil started.
Well, speaking of turmoil and international currency trouble, global currency markets last week experienced the sharpest sell-off since 2008, the financial crisis. We saw Argentina, Turkey, South Africa, Ukraine, Venezuela, India, Brazil, many others listed among the emerging market casualty list. Some analysts are pointing to Fed tapering as the root cause, but, you know, others think that it's, well, just basic central bank profligacy. What's the true culprit here?
Well, it's actually both, because remember, when the Fed was creating all this money for quantitative easing, and of course they're still creating it, even though they're talking about, you know, creating less, but as they were creating all this money, that money was flowing all around the world, a lot of it into emerging markets as people were chasing yield and looking for a way out of a depreciating U.S. dollar. And unfortunately, a lot of these emerging market economies, instead of allowing their currencies to rise in value, they simply printed more money in order to accommodate the inflows to prevent their currencies from going up. But now you have a situation where you have all this extra currency, and now you've got money trying to be yanked back out of those markets, and now it's putting huge downward pressure on those currencies because those money supplies have been dramatically inflated by the central banks. But the inflation started at the Fed, and we exported it to a lot of the emerging markets that import it from us. And now they're suffering the backlash. So, yeah, it is the Fed. The Fed is at the root cause of all these monetary imbalances because the U.S. dollar is the reserve currency, and everybody is trying to anchor their currency to the dollar. It's like everybody trying to tether their ship to the Titanic. You know, then the Titanic sinks and...
You know, Argentina and Venezuela also experiencing considerable shortage of basic necessities. Also, we're seeing some looting. Venezuela Bolivar was just devalued by more than 40%. And Brazil now, they're bracing for the economic contagion. Could this inflation and related social disturbances, could we see something like that reach our shores?
Well, absolutely. You know, the government now is trying to tell us that the biggest problem is that we don't have enough inflation, that prices aren't rising fast enough, and the Fed has to try to get them to go up faster. You know, meantime, look at what's happened in the last week or so. Natural gas prices up 30%, home heating oil prices up 10%, oil price is now almost at $100 a barrel again. I mean, these are some big, big increases. And a lot of Americans need to buy a lot of natural gas now and heating oil because we're having the coldest January in history, right? I mean, I suppose it was, you know, supposed to be global warming, but this is the coldest January ever, and Americans are having to use a lot more heating oil and natural gas, and the price is skyrocketing. You know, meanwhile, meat prices are hitting record highs, milk prices are hitting record highs. Even the post office just raised the price of a stamp by 6.5% from last year. I mean, everything is going up in price except people's paychecks. The paychecks are going down if you're even lucky enough to have one. So, you know, things are going to get more and more difficult for Americans. The president's going to talk about that in the State of the Union when he talks about the income disparity, which is being created by his policies and by the Federal Reserve. And, of course, what he proposes to do about it will only worsen the situation. So eventually, yeah, we could have people rioting over these high prices. Right? And it's only going to get worse.
You know, rumors of a stealth bank run around the globe are rife right now with the HSBC. I'm sure you heard many others restricting withdrawal limits and demanding to know what's the purpose of the funds that you're borrowing from us, as though it's not our funds. In China, depositors have been unable to withdraw hundreds of millions, reportedly, in deposits over the last few weeks. Art Cashin, formerly seen on CNBC, now with UBS, says that credit markets in China could be broken. What are your thoughts?
Well, I don't know. There's a lot of rumors circulating around about what's going on. But clearly, you know, there are strains on this global financial system. You know, there's so much credit, it's hard to contain it. It starts springing some holes, and everybody tries to plug them up, and then another one pops up. So, you know, this whole system is inherently unstable. The monetary system that we have with the dollar at the center and the huge trade and current account deficits that we run, and we export this inflation and bad monetary policy all around the world, and everything is based on, you know, Americans going deeper into debt when they're already too broke to pay back the money that they borrowed. So we have to inflate these asset bubbles and get them bigger and bigger and bigger so we can pretend that we have some level of solvency so we can keep on borrowing.
And as we wrap up here, you know, the Dow and related equities markets struggled last week. You know, the industrials off about 500 points for the week. Starting to look like the zenith may be in for the market. Hard to tell, you know, until we see it in retrospect, but I'd like to know your thoughts on the general equities market.
Yeah, you know, the bad news has been coming out. I mean, we had horrible, horrible retail sales, you know, across a wide scope of retailers. I mean, the big ones like JCPenney and Sears, but, you know, all kinds of bad numbers came out. And, you know, we had the worst Christmas since the 2008 financial crisis, and things were getting better. You know, why didn't Americans have money to go Christmas shopping? Now the stores have massive discounts, 70, 80% off. I think you're going to see lots of closings in 2014 of retailers. A lot of the malls are going to walk by. You're going to see a lot of empty stores, a lot of layoffs in that sector. Even today, look, Apple came out and guided down. They're not selling as many iPhones. I mean, the consumer is tapped out, right? And he doesn't have any more assets to lever up. He's already drowning in student loans, auto loans, credit card debt, mortgage debt. In fact, a lot of the people who used to own homes, you know, they lost their homes to foreclosure, and now they're renting, and the rising real estate market doesn't help them out. It just means that their landlord's going to raise their rent, and rent prices are going up, and that's hurting a lot of people. So they don't have money to go shopping anymore, and this is now showing up, and I think Wall Street is now having to deal with this bad news. And again, right now, it's still being resisted. People are waiting for the good news that they know is coming because they're convinced that this recovery is here. But little by little, kind of like Chinese water torture, these negative data points are going to keep coming out, surprising everybody, until there's enough of it that it's like a flood. And then you have a much bigger break in the market, which I think is what's going to be the catalyst for the Federal Reserve cavalry to come riding to the rescue, you know, with a bunch of QE, right, and give the market what it needs, which is another fix. And then we'll have another rally again. But I think the rally will be much bigger in precious metals and even bigger in precious metal stocks than it will be in the Dow or the NASDAQ.
Well, if your alternative hypothesis is proven correct, I mean, that certainly would be quite a turnaround event. I mean, with everyone factoring in further tapering to see the Fed make an about face.
That's why I thought the Fed wouldn't even taper, because I think they lose so much credibility. Not that they should have any credibility left to lose, but when they have this tapering timetable and then they come out and have to reverse it, you know, based on the data. But, of course, they did leave themselves that out. But that's what they've done all along. They've always said that the tapering is data dependent, right? So they left themselves an out to be able to reverse it, because they've said that they will adjust the QE based on the data. Adjust could go up or down. And so the Fed could still say, look, we never promised that we were going to taper. We only said that if the economy got better, we would taper. And clearly, based on the new data that we didn't have, the economy is not getting better. It's actually getting weaker. And that's why we're going to do more QE, you know, that they can say that eventually, when the economy is really strong, then we'll taper. But the problem is, they can never taper, right? You live by QE, you die by QE. If you build a recovery on QE, you have to continue the QE to keep the recovery going. You can never taper, because the minute you taper, there goes the recovery. You're right back in recession, and so there you're going with more QE. But the problem is, you know, the more you do it, the more QE you need. So it always has to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Exactly. And, you know, when we look at this supposed nascent recovery, for the most part, I mean, sure, we've seen the unemployment rate decline, mostly due to the fact that the participation rate is plunging, and we're still at least 1% or more above the Fed's target unemployment rate. So, I mean, that does leave considerable room.
The Fed has already said the unemployment rate doesn't matter. They've already taken that off the table and said, look, you know, we're looking at other factors, because in many ways the unemployment rate doesn't mean much if people keep leaving the labor force because they can't find jobs, and now they're not counted as being unemployed anymore. You know, I mean, if the labor force participation rate was still the same as it was when the recession began, the unemployment rate would be over 11%, right? So the only reason it's 6.7% is because all those people who used to have jobs are no longer looking for jobs. They're not even, they're just living on welfare or disability, and they're not considered unemployed because they don't want jobs or they're not looking for jobs. And as long as you can take millions and millions of people who are not working, even though they should be working, these are not people who are retiring because they have so much money they don't have to work. These are young people who should be in the workforce but either can't work or won't work, right? And they're just living on some government alternative, right? As long as we're not going to count them, then we're just deluding ourselves. But meanwhile, the labor force keeps shrinking. The tax base keeps shrinking. You have fewer and fewer people working to pay the taxes and to pay the benefits to all the people who aren't working, who are just collecting a check from the government.
Why don't you tell folks about what's going on at Euro-Pacific Capital?
Well, you know, we're just trying to spread the truth to our clients and our prospects, give them an alternative view and investment strategy than what they're getting from the mainstream establishment. You know, we're not, you know, spreading the lie of this rosy U.S. economy. We're not telling people to mindlessly buy overpriced, you know, social media stocks. People have to understand what the fundamentals are. We're helping our clients build global portfolios, buy the right stocks in the right countries with the right currencies. We do managed accounts. I manage my mutual funds. We do brokerage accounts specializing in international stocks. You can find out about it by talking to the brokers at Euro-Pacific Capital. You know, the website is europac.net. Peter Schiff, my gold company, Euro-Pacific Precious Metals. Actually, we're changing the name to Schiff Gold. Our website is schiffgold.com, where we sell physical gold and silver at very, very low markups. None of this, you know, huge markups on numismatics, just real low markups, just barely above spot price for coins and bars, which people need to buy. And, you know, and of course, I mentioned my gold fund. You can check, you can buy that anywhere, too, by the way. If you have an account at Schwab or Fidelity, you don't have to have an account with Euro-Pacific. You can buy the Euro-Pacific gold fund in your discount brokerage account or wherever you happen to be. And don't forget about my radio show, because I am talking about this stuff myself 5 days a week, right? Every Monday through Friday, shiftradio.com. You know, if we're not on a radio station in your area, and if, you know, we're not, you can always, you know, call up those radio stations and ask them to take the Peter Schiff show. But in the meantime, you can go to shiftradio.com and just listen whenever you want. The live show is 10 a.m. to noon Eastern. If you want to call in, then you want to listen live. But you can listen online anytime. We loop the show constantly, you know, between shows. And you can even become a premium member, which means you can listen to any show you want, anytime you want, this week's, last week's, last year. And we rip out all the commercials, so you can listen to it a lot quicker, and you can skip to the parts that you like or if you have a particular interview. So there's a lot of benefits to being a premium member.
Peter Schiff, thanks for joining us today. We'll look forward to talking to you again in 2014.
Hey, anytime.